This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Let's talk some Virginia politics. Chris Graham here on Street Knowledge, and we've got some poll numbers to get into. We're getting closer and closer to Labor Day, and Labor Day is when things sort of kick off when you're talking about political races that come up in November. And so, we're about, 3 weeks and change away from Labor Day, and we got some numbers from VCU. VCU conducting a poll of voters statewide, and the numbers show Democrat in the lead across the board, really, totally across the board, all three statewide races, and then the generic House of Delegates ballot. But we're going to break those numbers down just a little bit. In the governor's race, Ralph Northam, the current sitting lieutenant governor, a 42% to 37% lead over Ed Gillespie, the former Republican Party national chairman who ran in 2014 for the U.S. Senate seat held by Mark Warner and did surprisingly well. Despite Warner having approval ratings near 60%, Gillespie actually was just outside of the margin of error. Not margin of error, outside of the recount, same kind of concept, from winning that race. Very surprising. He was down in the polls by double digits the weekend before the election and ran better, certainly, than the poll numbers would indicate. And so right now he's down 5 points in the governor's race to Ralph Northam. Similar margins in the other two statewide races. Justin Fairfax, the Democratic lieutenant governor nominee, a 43% to 38% lead over Jill Vogel, a Republican state senator from the Winchester area. And then a 45 to 39 lead for the sitting Attorney General Mark Herring over John Adams, the nominee on the Republican side running for Attorney General. And then the generic House of Delegates ballot has, at least according to the VCU poll, Virginia voters preferring Democrats to control the General Assembly over Republicans by a 48 to 41% margin. Now, the funny thing there is, because of gerrymandering, however you want to put it, I mean, that's putting it bluntly and that's putting it accurately, but I'm sure Republican listeners would probably not like that characterization, but it's the truth. Anyway, Republicans hold a 66 to 34 advantage in the House, so it's kind of hard to imagine that many seats could flip to give Democrats control of the House. Giving Democrats credit, they are running more candidates. Very few seats this year that you're not seeing Democrats challenging Republicans, even in seats in races where the districts are solidly Republican, probably very favorable for Republican wins. Democrats are at least challenging and making Republicans defend their seats in those cases. So we got Democrats with 5-6 point leads, according to this VCU poll, at the state level, the three statewide races, a 7 point lead on that generic House of Delegates ballot. So what does all this mean? Well, one thing it means, and and I'm sure I'm not saying anything whichever side you're rooting for here, it's early to mid-August. Election day is still right around 3 months away, not quite, but still in that ballpark. And it's the summertime is a time of year. Both parties had primaries this year in June, so we're only a couple months out from there. The summertime is really not largely about doing the things you need to do to win the race. I mean, from the more visual standpoint, this is the time of year you kind of lick your chops, you lick your wounds a little bit. You get your staff ready. You go out and knock on doors quietly. You put, you get signs ordered. You start putting together your media plan in terms of what you're going to do to buy ads on TV stations strategically across the state. You get your budgets ready for that, and then you're ready to hit the ground running when September rolls around. October certainly rolls around. And you really, the hard work you're doing now that nobody really sees, you start seeing that in September and October. And so, now we're asking voters here in August, hey, what do you think about this race? This is largely a party ID kind of poll. I mean, this is, and I dove into the numbers a little bit. The party ID of the voter base was skewed a little Democrat. Now, I'm not going to say skewed in the negative sense that, boy, VCU must have gone out of their way to find more Democrats to offer their opinions in this poll than Republicans. you know, we do know that the Virginia electorate does skew a little Democrat. And we've, you know, we got currently three statewide office holders who are Democrats. We've got two U.S. senators who are Democrats. Barack Obama won the last, he had won, you know, both presidential elections in Virginia. Hillary Clinton won it last year. So this is a state that does largely lean Democratic at the state level. And so, so when I say that the poll leans Democrat, you know, that's not, again, that's not casting aspersions on VCU or anything else. You know, this is a state that, again, leans that way. But, you know, it's also a state that's pretty close. Obviously, as I mentioned, the, you know, Republicans with that big advantage in representation in the House of Delegates, they have a smaller majority, but a majority in the state Senate. And it's not been that long. 2009, Republicans swept all three statewide races. This is still a pretty competitive state. It's purple leaning bluish. But, you know, it's still a lot is up for grabs. I mentioned, you know, Ed Gillespie, for example, running that pretty solid race against Mark Warner in 2014. Tim Kaine, the, you know, U.S. Senator, the now junior U.S. Senator, ran for vice president last year. He won a pretty tight race against George Allen in 2012. I mean, so, yeah, Democrats have been winning a lot of elections in Virginia the last several years. But, you know, it's far from being, you know, a blowout kind of status, if you want to say. It's not Virginia Tech beating Virginia in football. Let's just put it that way. And so, yeah, so what are we looking at here? I looked at the numbers, you know, I talked about looking at the internals, looking more into the internals of these numbers. The VCU folks broke down the voter numbers by region. And, you know, the regions aren't 100% precise. You've got, you know, broken down into Northern Virginia, Northwest Virginia, Western Virginia, and Tidewater, you know, so it's, you know, there's, it could be a little more nuanced than that. And of course, once you get into subgroups, I think the number of voters, surveyed here was around 800. So when you start getting into, you know, those smaller subgroups, the margin of error is a little higher. So all that caveating done ahead of time, it's pretty clear that the battlegrounds are going to be Northwest and Tidewater. Western Virginia very clearly favoring the Republican candidates by large numbers. Northern Virginia, and I guess you include Richmond, at least the way VCU did here in this poll, you include Richmond north into the D.C. suburbs just as heavily for Democratic candidates. And in fact, you know, the advantage there then is in raw numbers. More people live in Richmond, Fredericksburg, and into the D.C. suburbs than live west of Richmond and south of Northwest Virginia, whatever you want to put that. You know, the Southwest Virginia, you know, there's a lot of support out there for Republican candidates, just not a lot of people. But that said, so cancel those two out as much as you can. The battlegrounds are going to be Northwest and Tidewater, I mentioned. And just for just illustrate, I pulled out the numbers in the governor's race. I'm one of those who believe strongly, and I don't think this is a revolutionary thought, but just to give you my thinking on this, I think pretty strongly that in a state race like this, where you have three races on a ballot, the governor's race gets by far the most attention. And, you know, you don't want to say this 100%, but largely voters vote party line. You know, you may have a favorite down the ticket that, you know, you may pull the lever for, but and you even see that in the numbers. I mean, the 5-point leads, 5 to 6-point leads in all three races for Democrats kind of indicate that, at least right now, the race is pretty much a party ticket kind of thing. So let's look at Northwest Virginia, and I think we would probably be included where I'm physically located, Augusta Free Press. We're physically located in Waynesboro. We may be on the south part of that Northwest bracket, but you know, you go into you include probably Charlottesville in that, and then up into Winchester. Gillespie with a slight lead, 38% to 35% over Ralph Northam. And in the Tidewater area, so the other corner of the state, you know, if you're flipping the state back and forth, Northwest and Southeast, the Tidewater region, which would include, you know, Virginia Beach and Norfolk and Hampton Roads, Hampton, Newport News, Suffolk, Chesapeake, environs in that general area, a 4-point lead, 39% to 35% for Northam over Gillespie. So you've got, and I looked at the other races and very similar trends in the other two statewide races with those two being battlegrounds. And so what does that say about this election? Well, a couple of things. I mean, obviously, you know, there's going to be obviously a lot of TV advertising in general. I mean, we know that. That's part of what politicking in the 21st century is all about. You know, Democrats and Republicans are going to do the best they can. There's a lot, spending a lot of money in the D.C. suburbs and in Richmond and Hampton Roads for Democrats. In Northern Virginia, it's going to be spending money to get as many voters out as possible because they have huge percentage margins there, and they're going to want to translate that as best as possible voter turnout-wise. And, you know, I would think that Republicans are going to want to do as much as they can down in the Virginia Beach area, Virginia Beach Tidewater area. It's a close race there. A big military presence, obviously, in Virginia Beach, Norfolk, particularly those two metropolises down in that part of Virginia. And, you know, they can at least if Republicans can at least hold serve there. It looks like these numbers indicate that if they can just, you know, move the needle a couple of points in their direction down in the Virginia Beach area, it's possible that, you know, they can certainly tighten this race up and make things very interesting. The Northwest part of things, you know, I'm not too sure, you know, the number of voters not quite the same as, you know, Northwest and West, basically anything in Virginia. When you're talking about, you know, how the state divides up, the bulk of voters live in that urban crescent, as we call it, Richmond up to D.C. and then Richmond down to Hampton Roads, Tidewater, as it's defined here by VCU. And, you know, there's a lot of territory east of that crescent, east and southeast, and I guess it's actually west and southwest of that crescent. I'm thinking, you know, I'm pointing. You can't see this on the podcast, but I'm pointing in the right direction, even though I'm not saying it out loud right. So, you know, a lot west and southwest of that urban crescent, there's a lot of territory. You know, lots of land, lots of little cities, lots of counties, but just not as many voters per as you have in those urban areas. Northern Virginia and Richmond, Norfolk, and Virginia Beach are the biggest, you know, the biggest four places, if you want to say. Norfolk, I mean, really breaking it down, it's you know, the Richmond, heavily Democratic, 80% or more Democratic most statewide and national election cycles. Norfolk is similarly 80%, roughly 75-80% Democratic. Virginia Beach, closer to 50-50. You know, sometimes it breaks Republican, sometimes it breaks Democratic, the number of voters being a determining factor there. And then Nova, you know, boy, Fairfax County itself can turn the election with huge turnouts for Democratic candidates there. Democrats tend to get 70% plus in statewide and national elections in Fairfax. And the sheer number of people who live in Fairfax. Those numbers tend to come in later on election night, so don't be surprised if you're sitting there on election night and half the night, it looks like Republicans are going to win this thing. We saw that as recently as last year, Hillary Clinton trailing big for most of the night in Virginia. And then as those, for whatever reason, those Northern Virginia numbers tend to come in later and later in the cycle, the nightly cycle. And she won Virginia. Just, we saw the same trend in 2008 and 2012 with Barack Obama, 2012 with Tim Kaine. You know, that's where the support is. The early returns come in from almost kind of like it starts in Southwest down in the Bristol area, and kind of, you know, the reports come in, you know, towards the east and northeast as the night goes on. So that'll make for a fun election night. I think this is going to be one of those election nights that will be fun. I really think I look at these numbers and I see a 5 to 6 point lead for Democrats across the board in those statewide races and say, There's tightening coming up here. Again, that would indicate that, to me, what I see in these numbers is, again, people really haven't put a lot of thought into it yet. You still do have roughly around 20% or so, 15% in the attorney general race, but, you know, 15 to 20% of voters who are undecided. You don't see a lot of flipping once a person says they're voting. They tend to stay that way, especially, again, those party stalwart type voters. But you still got margin for error there with that 15%, 15 to 20% who've not made decisions yet. You do have a Libertarian candidate running for governor that could throw a wild card into that race. Cliff Hyra could throw a wild card into that race. I'm not convinced that will be the case, but, you know, there will be a few percent who will split off, and who that impacts more, I'm not sure that that's a strong indication. 2013, I think we saw that there was, I'm trying to think who the candidate was that year. Sayre, I think, or Savra, or Sarve, Robert Sarve, who ran and got, you know, he actually got around 7% of the vote. And I think the indications, that if I remember correctly from 2013, it seemed like it maybe hurt Cuccinelli a little bit more. You know, Terry McAuliffe underperformed his polls a little bit, but Cuccinelli really could have benefited from some of those business-first conservatives casting a ballot for him and could have actually pulled off what would have been an upset that year over McAuliffe. Some total here where we are with these poll numbers. I think that it's good to get a snapshot. You know, it's good to get a sense of where things are because, you know, it's still early. I will say that it does interest me to see, you know, as much whatever TV I am watching these days. It tends to be a lot of sports, to be honest, and I've seen a lot of Gillespie advertising. Which is, you know, this stage is early. It's summertime. Again, people are doing whatever they're doing. It's not a lot of thinking about politics right now, especially November politics. But a lot of Gillespie ads on Nationals games, Orioles games. Those are things I watch a lot. And actually, during the day in the office, I tend to have CNN on. And I've seen, you know, quite a few Gillespie ads in the local cable breaks. For Gillespie there too at various times of the day. And so, and I've not, to my memory, I mean, you know, one of those kings, not scientific, but just, you know, from what I remember, I've not really seen a Northam ad yet on any of these. So, you know, it's a strategy where you could argue, you know, arguing both sides of this, so to speak, you could argue, well, why are you spending money in August? What sense does that make? People aren't voting for 3 months. You know, is it too soon to be doing these kinds of things? The other strategy, I remember, you know, in the 1990s, Bill Clinton ran this perfectly, 1992 and 1996 campaigns. A lot of money spent very early in those two campaign cycles, sort of prepping the battlefield a bit to get people thinking about him and thinking positively about him. It was largely his ads were bio kind of ads and just trying to get his name out there and kind of get on the tip of your, kind of like how you would do a marketing campaign for a product, and then you know, then they hit home in the fall with those follow up ads that reinforced the message, and you know, especially in '96, I think it was a strategy that really benefited. You know, he spent money as early as '95 on his reelection campaign in '96, and people at the time scratched their heads in amazement that. That he would, you know, he and his campaign would blow that kind of money that early, but actually won a pretty comfortable re-election in 1996 as a result. So I've been watching these Gillespie commercials and the sheer number of them over the past couple of weeks and thinking about those 90s campaigns by Bill Clinton that were so successful in using early advertising to sort of set the agenda. You're not really hearing anything from Ralph Northam at this stage, and you know, that's strategic, I'm sure, on their side. Just like Gillespie's trying to get out there and prep the battlefield and get people thinking Ed Gillespie in a very positive way. You know, Ralph Northam deciding to stay silent. You know, they have their reasons for doing that too, and I suppose, you know, they're, you know, maybe going to spend their money. Both of these sides are going to spend you know, quite a bit of millions of dollars on this race, and perhaps the strategy from Northam is to spend, you know, more money in September and October, certainly, to kind of go wall to wall. I guess that's got to be the strategy, because you're not seeing anything from those folks now. Really, not seeing a lot either from any of these candidates in terms of. I mean, you're seeing. I've got a news release sitting in my inbox right now as I'm recording this podcast. Ralph Northam with some policy proposal in agriculture and forestry, and you know, you those kind of things are popping up. You see endorsement. Announcements and things like that. Just the little stuff to keep the name out there for the junkies. That's who's paying attention right now, the junkies, the political junkies who can't get enough of this stuff. You know, the debates are being scheduled, and we're going to hear about those. Again, only a few, in my opinion, only a few people pay attention to those kind of things, especially at a statewide level. Nothing is screaming out to me about this being a really sexy race, and that's surprising. Yeah, as we kind of wrap up things here on the podcast, A little surprising that this isn't a sexier race. I mean, you've got all the attention at the national level, the national news level on the first 200 days now of the Trump administration, and all the various daily headlines, the controversies, both within the administration, the poor dealings of the administration with Republicans in Congress. You know, Congress not falling in line with Trump in passing any of his agenda, anything significant from his agenda, and how Virginia and New Jersey, which run, you know, those odd number year, off year, 1 year past the presidential election at the state level, how they could be litmus tests for, a snapshot of the first year of the presidency, whoever the new president is. And I'm not sensing that right now in Virginia. I'm not sensing that there's any feeling that this is a snapshot election, sort of a mini referendum on Donald Trump. Again, Virginia did go Democrat in 2016, has now gone Democrat at the presidential level the last three times, has two sitting U.S. senators who are Democrat, has three current statewide office holders who are Democrat. So perhaps that's a reason this isn't, at least right now, appearing to be a litmus test kind of election. But you know, I don't know. Maybe the Northam and Democratic side is preparing to unleash that after Labor Day. I'm not quite sure, but the Gillespie side, Gillespie, Vogel, and John Adams are going to have to fairly or unfairly answer for the first 200 plus days of the Trump administration. And I can't imagine that Northam and Fairfax and Herring are not going to make them. There are so many issues out there that Democrats can use to motivate their base, maybe de-energize the other side. We're seeing the president with historically low approval numbers. The poll average is, you know, just a little over 36% right now, which is, again, historically low for a first-term president within 200-plus days of being inaugurated. And even hardcore Republicans are starting to peel off from supporting the president. That yes, this will probably become eventually a referendum on Trump, and we'll see how the Gillespie, Vogel, and John Adams side deals with that. Do they run from Trump? I imagine they probably will. I imagine that's got to be the case. Gillespie's a party stalwart type guy, former RNC chair, as I mentioned, who there's no doubt he's conservative, but he's got, you know, he's a moderate conservative in his day and age. He's not a Tea Party radical or anything like that. Jill Vogel is, you know, she's maybe a reformed hardcore conservative. She's known for now, among other things, she was criticized by the Republicans for her stance on LGBTQ issues. I was at an event the Shenandoah Valley Pride put on a couple of weeks ago, helping volunteer with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention at this huge, you know, Pride Festival in Harrisonburg, and you know, drew thousands of people from across the state and throughout the Mid-Atlantic. And Jill Vogel was set up there and actually, you know, received pretty well for her stances on various LGBTQ issues. So, you know, she departs from the orthodoxy there, no question. Don't know much about John Adams, and we're trying to learn a little bit more about him as this campaign cycle goes on. But again, this is going to be the issue coming down the pike. So don't be surprised to see that. So that should wrap us up. Fun talking some Virginia politics. And thank you for listening. And, you know, as the week goes on here, we'll wrap up actually tonight. I'm recording this on Tuesday. So if, you know, you're not listening on Tuesday, I'd say tonight. I'll be doing a Facebook Live from the Wayne Theater as the Wayne Theater prepares to tonight's dress rehearsal for the last dress rehearsal before the opening of Shrek the Musical, which opens on Thursday, first of four nights this week, four nights next week. So an eight-night run at the Wayne Theater, local production of Shrek the Musical. But when I say local production, don't turn your nose down. This is a $20,000 plus production, bells, whistles, and more. And I'll be backstage interviewing some of the cast members as they get ready for the dress rehearsal, as they're getting into costume, getting their makeup on, all that stuff. I mean, we're talking about Shrek, so this is not, you know, this isn't just a little bit of powder. This is the whole deal here. So Facebook Live, that we'll have that for the website later as well. Going down Friday, to VMI for the first football scrimmage of the fall camp for VMI. Hope to talk afterwards with Coach Scott Wackenheim and some players, you know, as I'll prepare myself for broadcasting home games for VMI football this fall for the third season. I'll be doing that. So looking forward to that. And we'll probably get into some wrestling, getting, you know, previewing SummerSlam. We like to talk pro wrestling here on our podcast. And maybe even work in some UVA football. Who knows? They kind of black you out a little bit. They don't, Coach Bronco Mendenhall and group don't like to talk too much to the media. They don't do a formal media day or anything like that. So it's a little hit or miss. But we'll talk some UVA football sometime this week as well. Not too far from the start of college football, about 3 weeks away. Plenty to talk about here on the podcast. And thank you for listening. And arrivederci, I suppose. Have a great day.